30th of December 2019. The year's almost over. I'm not. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. She has prepared her food. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. To him who lacks understanding, she says, come, eat of my food and drink of the wine that I have mixed. Forsake your folly and live and proceed in the way of understanding. On this 30th day of December 2019, from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth, I welcome you to join me in today's webcast. And oh my goodness, what a world we live in today. I looked at the news and I could not help but to focus upon what is happening in our particular worship centers, the places where we meet and gather and worship. They're now becoming shooting galleries, and my goodness, looks like crazy, crazy black folk taking the laws into their own hands. And I must say, unfortunately, putting a bad light on humanity. But what can I say? We all saw it coming. The worse our environment becomes, the more people are living in estrangement from other people. When you have more people that don't have, there needs to be wisdom. I'm reading from Proverbs chapter 9, and I'm looking at some notes that I have called Pushing Through Proverbs, A House That Wisdom Builds. It's kind of like an invitation of sorts, and I want to share these thoughts with you, and maybe it can bring a little ease and comfort to your mind. I'm a man of 75 years old, going on 76. And as I look at my life and the value that this life brings to others as they attempt to find their way, and I think that that's what's good about lives. We all seem to be trying to find our way. Man, when I looked at the report on the news and this guy has a long rifle in the Church of Christ in Texas, and then somebody in the church pulls a gun out of his back and starts shooting at him. In other words, you got armed people in houses of worship shooting back at us. Can you believe that? We are living in perilous times. And as we live in these particular times when people are trying to struggle and to find their way, we are left with an ominous question. What happened? What happened in America? Well, what happened in America is what's happening all around the world. You have more and more and more people that don't have. And if they don't have, they find themselves coming into a particular situation. Well, if I don't have, then you shouldn't have. Why should you have if I don't have? And that's kind of weird because you would answer and say, because it's mine. And it's not yours. Well, people are responding in that way and they are saying, I am going to show you what is mine. But what I'd like to do is I'd like you with me because I go to the book and I think Proverbs is a pretty hefty book. As I begin this chapter, I'm drawn to a picture that the preacher draws as he paints these words. And so let's investigate this together. We note the imagery that we shall find in the whole of this chapter. The imagery is vivid. It is wild. We shall see for the first time in this book, anyhow, how the preacher builds his argument with comparative contrast statements. And I love the book of Proverbs because you find that comparative contrast all through it. We shall also see how the guilt factor sets up the heart of the reader of these Proverbs as each participant ascribes to the true or the false of that statement. And that's what I'm asking you to do as you listen to me. Now, I know that some of you have pulled out that ancient book and you have it open to Proverbs chapter 9 and you're beginning to start in verse 1. I read the verses that I was going to teach you from. So why don't you act like you're on a train or on a bus just listening to me. Try to keep your minds off of the mundane things that keep your head spinning and view what the preacher wants you to see. What of this house that wisdom builds? Wisdom's invitation is seen in verses 1 through 6. We won't get beyond that. Wisdom invites you to participate in the journey that she takes you on. Now, here again, we're on this journey, and in order for us to safely get through this journey, we have to be truthful with ourselves. So, the speaker begins by stating that the house is already built. It says, wisdom has built her house. In other words, it has been established. It is a fact. It is there. Whether you believe it or not, whether you like it or not, wisdom exists. In other words, the tangibility of this objective human trait is right in front of our faces. All right? So the house is already built. There is already a place, the prospect of knowing the right and contending with the right is right in front of you. So the writer doesn't say, where is wisdom? We can't find it. The world is messed up. Everything should be shattered. No, he invites you to come to a house that's already built. And wisdom has built this house. And wisdom has something for the persons that walks through the door. Thus, we see wisdom as the best host inviting a guest into her quarters. And that's what I'm inviting you into. I want you to forget all the mundane things that are clouding your minds, that are causing you to feel perplexed. And I'm coming to you this way because I don't need a pulpit to teach this from. I don't need a lectern to stand in front of. Those days are over because they're walking in synagogues and churches, shooting people, now killing each other. And that's going to grow and grow and grow. But wisdom still has her perfect place. This is a vigorous invitation in passive form because it says, has built her house. Isn't that wonderful? See, in verse 1a, the statement is made. Wisdom is there. And when you come down to verse 1b, it says there is no special significance to the seven pillars in particular, because it says she has hewn out her seven pillars. Now, what is this getting at? Because you see, you have to ask those kind of questions. Pillars were used in larger houses during this time. And so the suggestion should be made that wisdom has built a strong house. In other words, this isn't a straw house. This isn't a paper mache house. This is a house that is supporting her own standing. That's why I follow wisdom I was having a conversation with a young man earlier today, and I said, many people that know of you thinks that you're a failure because you were building something on that a wise man, if he thought through, wouldn't waste so much time and money. But if you stand under the pillars of wisdom, you won't waste your time and your money trying to figure things out. See, wisdom has already painted this picture. And the picture is plain. And so we see, this is a strong house. Many think that the reference has to do with completion or perfection. And indeed, wisdom has been completed and perfected and fulfilled. So you don't have to say, well, I'm looking to find wisdom. No, you don't have to. It's right there. We also note how wisdom boasts in her wealth. And this could be very significant. Let's go back in chapter 8 and look at verses 18 through 21. And you know what I'm talking about. Riches and honor are with me. This is wisdom speaking. Wisdom says, you know what I get? Riches and honor are with me. Enduring wealth and righteousness. This is what wisdom offers you. And then it says, in verse 20, I walk in the way of righteousness. This is wisdom talking. In the midst of the paths of justice. And look at verse 21. To endow those who love me with wealth. See, the preacher said, if you love wisdom and what she offers you, this house of seven pillars built strong to last and to stand, then you will gain from its wealth. And the latter part of verse 21 says, that I may fill their treasuries. I was just talking with the young men earlier, and I said, you were chasing after treasure without seeking wisdom first. That's what brought me to Proverbs chapter 9. Because I know that if you don't do something based upon the wisdom that God has, seven pillars built upon, you're going to fail. You're going to try and you're going to fail because you didn't build it on wisdom. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that old church stuff, John, doesn't work. No, it doesn't work for you because you don't believe. I will and shall always be a believer. Ah! Now, there's where the rubber meets the road. Because what is a believer? A believer is someone that has plenty to lay his life upon. See, I'm a believer. My life is empty, and I lay it on the lap of wisdom. Is there a point to say that wisdom presides in a house that reflects her status? Yes, because you can tell by the way that house is ran. Have you ever been in the house of another person and it's cluttered, it's filthy, it's stinky, it's out of whack? I think about yesterday, I went outside and I was raking the leaves on the side of my house and cleaning the path. Because wisdom, when it builds her house, has a neat, clean. See what I'm talking about? This travels with me for the rest of my life. And I try to tell people, if you ever own anything, then you perfect it with the same wisdom that built it. See what I mean? Let's look at verse 2. Verse 2 of Proverbs chapter 9 says, she, speaking of wisdom, she has prepared her food, she has mixed her wine, she has also set her table. There is so much in this verse, and if you don't see it, my dear friend, you are blind. The animals have been slaughtered. The wine has been prepared. What does this demonstrate? This is beautiful when you look at verse 2. It demonstrates that this meal that wisdom prepares was indeed important. You see, it just wasn't a, oh, I think I'm hungry. I sit down and I'll pick a bite. No. The food that the preacher talks about is precisely dedicated to help the person that sits at the table to eat it. If you eat at the table of wisdom, my friend, eat slow, devour slow, and gain what it gives you. Oh, this is beautiful. This is what I love when I was a pastor, because when I looked at these verses, oh, and let me tell you, I am teaching you from an outline that I put together years ago. These are not new words. These are words that came from my mind years ago about this beloved chapter, these six verses that I'm sharing with you. And I apologize for not coming to my site earlier. I have not been led. I only come to johnnycoleman.org when I'm led to come. I do not force a study, because nothing can force reality. I think life has to present itself. And for those of you that yet listen to me and try to pick up words of wisdom from a man of God that yet loves God and loves everything about God and about the story of Jesus, although I do not believe everything that is stated, because much of that has been subjected to and already devoured in generations far before Christianity came about. So get my drift. I'm not just stuck in one mode. I want you to pick up the beauty that God gives you. I said this meal that wisdom prepares is indeed important. The slaughtered beast, as compared to the sacrificed, pertains to this feast, not being one inclined to religion, but to enjoyment. You see, this was not a religious taking of the bread and the wine. No, no, no. When wisdom prepares her table, it's more than a drink of a cup of wine and a piece of toast. Ah, no. Verse 2b really lets you know what you're looking at. It says she has also set her table. See, this presents the idea that the preparations went beyond an average mean. In other words, wisdom has brought out the best silverware, the best china to eat on it, the best cloths to cover you with. Wisdom takes care of her partakers. See, that's why when you do anything in this life and you haven't put thought and wisdom behind it, you're going to fail in it. You're going to fail in it. You better grab this book. And you better weigh your life by what's in this book. I tell people that and they say, oh, John, you're just looking for a pulpit. No, 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 no. I wonder what they were preaching in the Dallas church Sunday morning when the black man came in there with a long rifle and started shooting them up. I'd love to know what the preacher's sermon was. I'd love to know what the preacher was shoving down the throats of the parishioners. Or was he talking about wisdom and love and the table, that when that deranged man came in there with that long rifle, he could have heard some of the word of God proclaimed instead of some self-help crap? And I'm not saying that the church wasn't preaching the truth. I'm just saying I'm wondering what they were preaching. Because if it was something from wisdom, that man would have heard it. He would have took note of it. I remember many occasions when I pastored, I had people that I invited to come by to hear me preach that were a little deranged. I was a traffic officer then, and I was having my break time coffee and a cookie somewhere on West Adams Boulevard, west of Hauser. I recall that. And there was a man that came up to the window as I'm waiting on my coffee, very dark black man. He was so dark that his skin looked gray, and his hair was napped up. And I believe in always keeping my hair combed nicely. But his hair was napped up, and he came up to the window, and he said, "Hey, man." And I was in my traffic officer uniform, and I said, "Hello, young man, how are you?" And he looked, and he saw the lapel on my shirt, and I had a cross on it because I was Wilshire chaplain. And he said, "What does that cross mean?" I said, "That cross means that I'm a chaplain, a Christian chaplain in the Wilshire Police Department down on Venice Boulevard, and I wear that so the officers will know who I am. And he said, so you're a preacher? And I said, yes. And he said, you got a church? And I said, no, I don't have a church. The church belongs to God. I just supervise the spiritual matter that's given in that church. And he said, would I be welcome? Now, this guy was dark, had a very unusual face. He wasn't a man that you would want to look at. He wasn't handsome. And I love to look at handsome black men. I do. But this man was, well, to put it in nice terms, ugly. He looked just like, really, a gorilla. He looked just like that. His features, his nose, his face, and his eyes, and his hair. And he said, would I be welcome in your church? I said, yes, I preach in a Christian church. I teach to love all people. You're a human being, obviously. I'm speaking with you. Yes, you could come to my church. And I took a business card out of my pocket. I kept them in my uniform pocket in the front to give it to people when I had conversations out in the city. I was a traffic officer. I'd speak to people. I love people. I always love people. That's how God had me making my daily living. He gave me the best job I could have. Put me on a three-wheel motorcycle, put me out there talking with people, enjoying people, having conversations with them, having a cup of coffee with them, sharing the love of what? The love of the universe with them, man. I had the best job in the world. And with that job, I took care of my wife, my two little girls, and we're living in the house that I'm in right now. I remember it. And I invited him to come to the church. Well, he came that Sunday. I'll never forget it. I was standing tall behind the pulpit preaching about the love of Jesus. I don't know what it was, but it was about the love of Jesus and what Christ can do for you. And let me tell you what happened. This man walks in the church. I kid you not. He walks in the church, and the ushers came in behind him as a man was looking for a place to sit. I had a good medium-sized congregation. He was standing in about the third row from the back, and he walks in, and the people start getting up, moving in their seats. You could have seen a ring of empty chairs around where this man was seated in the back third row from the wall in a good-sized church that seated 150 people. People start not paying attention to me, looking at him, snarling up, moving, protecting their children from him. I stood in the pulpit. I kid you not. I remember it like it's happening right now in front of me. And I looked in that poor man's eyes, and he looked in mine. And with his face, he said, see? See? I felt so embarrassed at that time. I could have cursed and said, damn these niggers sitting in this room. Damn these stupid, hateful people who listen to me week after week. And another beautiful human being walks in the room. His facial features are a little different. He looked like he didn't have too much to eat. And they treated him like manure. Black people looking at other black people treating him like shit. That is what I saw from that pulpit. When I led in that congregation, I thank God that the building that that took place in does no longer exist at 976 East Jefferson Boulevard. That the building itself is gone. On that Sunday morning when I preached there, and that human being came in there, and those black, that was not a house built on wisdom. That was a house built on the refuge of human religion. Now you pay attention to me as I teach you from this beloved book, listener of mine, because God has not decommissioned me to tell you the truth. But don't participate where you have other people that would treat another human being in such a lowly way, and their own kind. It is no wonder that people are walking in our churches and in our synagogues and shooting us up. The hypocritical Christian church that I was a part of. But I believe what I was teaching. I taught it because it was true to my heart. That's why I still teach it on my own website, making my own webcast. But when I look at what's happening around me today, it's bullshit personified. You go to church and they're twerking and tweaking and dancing and jumping and shaking in convulsions. And their leaders make no cognitive dissonant sense at all. Only an idiot would go and listen to the bullshit that dribbles from today's pulpits. And you wonder why somebody's going in there with a damn long gun? Well, let me get back to my outline. I didn't want to lose my place. But you said, oh, PJ, we haven't heard from you in a while. Those of you that listen to me, that love me, know this. You know this. When you look at a church today that treats people like those people, and that church that I pastored so many years ago treated them, and I stayed in year after year after year, hoping that they would get better, never to see it. And then when you look at the society that we live in, oh, I want to feast that wisdom's table. My goodness, let's get back to this. Verse 2b presents the idea that the preparations for the feast at wisdom table is beyond the average mean. Ah, now let's look at verse 3. What does verse 3 says? She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. Y'all better pay attention to this. Just listening to this, if you didn't get the gist of it, the sense of what God is trying to say to us today, then you've missed the whole point of opening up this book. Don't pick up the book of Proverbs and think that you're just opening up one of the 66 books and you're going to quote some ancient theme. You should read deep and to find out the mysteries of this tragically beautiful book that has been bestowed by the hearts of men looking for fun and fantasy. Look at verse 3. What do I see in it? The sending out of the maidens were the final stage of preparation for the feast. Oh, and what better way? See, I'd rather eat at the hands of a maiden than at the hands of some scruffy old male soldier. Oh yes, because that maiden is going to prepare that table right. Wisdom lets you know what you're looking at. I was talking with a young man not too many hours ago, and he told me that a young maiden was going to prepare him a dish because his money's getting low. He said that she was going to prepare him a dish of kind of like a dressing made all together with good food in it. And he said, when I get this, I'll share it. Yes, he's going to share it with me because wisdom is making that dish. Follow along. Follow along. This book got lessons in it. And you guys think PJ is sitting up here with his brain going to dust? No, my friends, I may be retired from the pulpit. Listen to me, my friends, and listen to me in Europe and in Canada and in Mexico and in China, because I know because you contact me in Norway. Listen to me, my friends, and listen to me. I'm the same Pastor John, the very same one. If you want to know a man that's going to give you what this book means, you keep coming to my website. This proves to you that God is alive because he's alive in me. That same God that pulled me up out of the miry pits of depression and disgust and set me up to preach his word. I'm preaching to a brand new congregation that listens through means that no one would ever think existed. This is a free pulpit that I preach on. I don't need a deacon board behind me. Oh, I need somebody saying amen in the church. I don't need sisters singing and wagging their butts in the choir. Oh, I don't need somebody to have a money board to do this. It doesn't take money to do this. All you need is a heart filled with God and want to reach his children out there, because there's a few of you still believing out there. Believing. Let me get into verse 3. See, you guys got me carried away doing this. Ah, what do I see? What do I see? Let me take my time. Preparations have been made. You know what? These remind me of Matthew chapter 22, verses 2 and 3. Matthew chapter 22. I have that in my notes here, and I want to share that with you, because see, we're talking about a feast, right? 22. I'm turning to it. There was a time that I could pick up this Bible and turn to it, and in a fluke, I'd be right there. Matthew 22, 2 and 3, it reads like this. This is Jesus speaking. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. Now listen to Jesus' words and the wisdom found right here. And he says, and he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast. You see the book of Proverbs talking about the maidens, the maidens. That's it. See, but look who he sent out. Okay. He sent out his slaves to call those. Now, what do you see me as, my friend, over this johnecoleman.org? I am merely a slave of God inviting you. See how God is still alive? To the wedding feast through you listening to Pastor John, your internet pastor, on this website. And some of your hearts are being blessed and your lives are being blessed because you are adapting to these ideas, because the churches that you attended have gone bankrupt. Now, there are some churches that still have preachers preaching like this, and it may be the long-barreled fools that are coming in to shut this down. Christians, they'd have to come to my house to find me. And if they come here with a long rifle, I got a short muzzle gun that can meet them on an equal level. Because as long as God chose me to do this, he is pulling it out of me, and I'm going to do it until the day I die. So I see the comparisons here. Jesus said in verse 2, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. Verse 3, and he sent out his slaves, Pastor John, to call those who had been invited, those of you that are listening to me, to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. So those of you that are listening are willing to come. And I'm okay with that. I just thought I'd throw that verse in there because it parallels verse 3. She, wisdom, sent out her maidens, that are the slaves, to call from the tops of the heights of the city. You see it in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 3. And you see it in Matthew, thousands of years after the Proverbs were written, chapter 22, verses 2 and 3. That's why I have my Bible. That's why I'll always believe this Bible. And that's why I am still alive and my mind is doing well. Boy, there was a brother, Eric. He listens to me from the Carolinas. He called me and he told me a couple of days ago, PJ, put this app on your phone. I'm sending you $100. Eric knows I never asked for a dime over the internet. But you know what? Thank you, Eric, because I bought me some pain pills for the often pain that I get in the limbs of my body. And when I was in the drugstore, I thought about Eric Price. And I said, thank God that I spoke to that young man and his entire family when they came New Jersey. And I did a conference with some brothers up there. And Eric called me around this Christmas holiday. Man, do you know how that blessed my heart? Do you know how that blessed my heart? There's just a remnant. There's a remnant of us. I think about a brother, he's up in Canada. Moved his family from Great Britain. Moved to Canada. He still listens to me. And brother, I'm still waiting on you to come to Los Angeles so I can just go out and have dinner with you one night. We're going to have a ball. And his kids are near about grown now. So I have folk that's been listening to me for years over this insane thing called the internet. When I was in the Army, oh, I'll get back to the text. Don't worry about that. I'm just 35 minutes into the webcast. When I was into the Army working with cryptographic equipment, this was really the first stage of a computer. When I was in the Army, we would send messages through crypto. And I thought that that was an amazing miracle. And now to see me doing a webcast in my office, in my home, and watching this thing being prepared on a SoundForge 2.0.40, who is building a sound script, and when I save it, it's going to be MP3, and in a flash of a second, I can put this thing up on my website as soon as I finish doing it, and know that someone in Sweden can be listening to me 5 minutes after I put it up is beyond the imagination. I am at awed at the technology, people. And I'm looking at this, and do you know how much I used to pay to preach and to have that preached word? Now people can just know my name, know that I'm going to give them the truth, and tune in. And I'm just sharing with you what the Bible means. You better get on wisdom's train. Okay, let me get back to this. What else do we see here? We see the parallels in Jesus in sending out the maidens. And in verse 3b, we see the extension of the invitation that was beyond the sound of the voice. Now, you don't get what I'm saying? Look at it. She has sent out her maidens. She calls. Okay. She calls. This is beautiful. The extension. Not only that the invitation was given, wisdom is sitting there waiting on you to take it, but it's calling at you. It's calling at you. It's beyond the sound of the voice. It is public, and it is in a prominent part of the city. Now, you have to know that. Because it says, from the tops of the heights of the city. This call is not coming from the low ghetto slums only. No, this is coming from the finest parts of the city. Listen to what this beautiful verse is saying. Beyond the sound of a voice, this call is a public call, asking anybody to take wisdom. From the prominent part, look at Proverbs Chapter 8, go back there with me and read verse 1. Just turn the page over. You have your Bible open. Look at Proverbs chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call and understanding lift up her voice? Do you know what this is saying? This thing is saying, don't be a fool. You know wisdom hasn't just been put there to just ride and not have its blessed effects on your behind. We must see the contrast of wisdom's call to come with that call of folly that diminishes. I'm going to tell you, one of the hardest teachings or lessons that I use when I try to teach these young men, I call them boys sometimes, but these young men that come by and visit me, God bless them, I love them so much, they are young men. And sometimes I see them grappling and grasping for something that's not going to take them anywhere. Now, I try to jump in as a father would and say, you shouldn't go there, boy. You shouldn't go. Why not? Why not? Don't I have a right to try? I said, no. Not when a person like me has already tried and knows that that won't work. Sometimes I think older men give up on young men because they keep telling the younger men, and the younger men keep delving into failure. Delving into failure. That is what has happened in the black community. We are looking at young men that continuously dive into failure. I'll show you how it works, and I'm not trying to kill nobody's dream. But I'll show you how it works. If you're trying something somebody else have tried and have failed at it repeatedly, why would you think that it's going to be successful coming through your endeavors? Especially if you don't have the sustenance to back up what you're trying to build. I try to tell a young person, I try to tell them, look, and they always try to give me a, well, you chose being a pastor. I said, no, I didn't. Oh, hell no, I didn't. Nobody in his right mind would choose being a pastor. Not a true pastor. I mean, come on, man. No, that's not what wisdom did. See, wisdom pulled me to her table. I didn't choose to go there. I was abducted, okay? I'll put it that way. I think that was the, well, let me get back to my outline. I'll tell you about me being abducted at a later time. So, I said that we have to see the contrast of wisdom's call to come with that call of folly to come, because young men and young women today are being called to folly. Now, I want you to note verses 4 through 6 as we end this up, the particular truisms that are found within the invitation itself, these particular truisms. Now, we're going to look at verse 4a, and it says, whosoever is naive, let him turn in here. Now, this is something. And I like the first part of this verse, whosoever is naive. If you're a person that lacks the heart to do or to know, turn in here at wisdom. Listen to me now. Listen to me, youngster. Listen to me, young person. You know if you lack it in your heart to do and to know, you know that. You know what that means? Let me give it to you plain. If you're a person that lacks inside of your head, your knowledge, and your heart to do, what should I do? You find yourself saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know what direction to go in. Lord, have mercy. I'm confused. I don't know what to do. I've lost my way. Oh, man, I'm scared. I don't want to walk in there. Oh, hell no. No, many have tried and failed in that. See, that's you. You need wisdom. Listen. Listen to verse 4a. If you're a person who lacks the heart to do or to know where you're going or to be, turn in there. That's what this verse is saying. Stop it. Turn into wisdom. Follow wisdom. Follow wisdom. It's saying, leave that which you were chasing after and learn something new from wisdom's classroom of instruction. Look at this verse. Whosoever is naive, that's what naivete. And you know, when I talk with these young men, I was naive when I became the pastor of a church. Because I didn't study the lives of these people, the background of these people, the nurturement of the people that I was going to open up and give a living, alive, living word of God. Because God was alive in me when he grabbed me back when I was 23 years old. When he really saved my soul, when he spoke to me. See, that's when wisdom grabbed me. When I was 23 years old. See, wisdom was speaking with me then. Wisdom didn't grab at me when I was 21. No, I was 21 looking at church people, looking at life, trying to figure out what life was all about. And then when I was getting ready to make my choice to live in a way that dictated where my life would go, wisdom grabbed me. And I found wisdom grabbing me in the person of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, the Savior who called me out of this world of darkness into his marvelous light. Now that is when wisdom first grabbed me. It didn't grab me through Islam because I didn't grow up in that Islamic culture. If it had grabbed me there, I would have kissed wisdom there. Wisdom grabs in any and every religion because every man knows what wisdom they need. I am speaking wisdom to those that can understand the culture of Christianity. Not that the church builds to enslave you to its entitlement. Not that. For that was the religion that I had grasped upon when I was searching and striving for wisdom. Now, I give you this wisdom without the intrusion of religion. See, a lot of people try to say, Pastor John has lost his faith. No, I won't play with my faith. What I'm giving you is free. You don't have to go to a seminary to get a degree, to be qualified, to teach them. You can see wisdom screaming out from the pages of the book. You don't need it. And it is this kind of faith that will carry you through the difficult days of trial that is set before you. Oh, yeah. Now, let's look at this. Let's look at this. Leave that which you were chasing after. And learn something new from wisdom's classroom of instruction. The call makes the assumption that the one hearing it needs to make a decision. That's what I see in verse 4. It's coming up with the assumption, you're the one listening to this, you hearing it, you obviously need, why won't you attach yourself to wisdom? Why won't you make the choice to grab wisdom? See, I'll tell you why most people in this culture hasn't. Because folly has overtaken them. That man with that long rifle in that Texas church, just like that man that went into the synagogue and shot, hacked them up with a machete. Listen. They did not respond to the call of wisdom, and look at how it has them living. They look like mad zombies, mad at the world. Now, look at verse 5 of Proverbs chapter 9. Come, eat of my food. This is wisdom calling. Come, eat of my food, and drink of the wine that I have mixed. Let's deal with this. Looking at the meal and the significance. Looking at the food provides a staple for spiritual life. What is the staple that wisdom gives? Look what they get. Eat of my food and drink of my wine. Wisdom doesn't tell you what food she's giving you, but what she's saying, the food and the drink of wisdom satisfies. See, my food satisfies. Now, how do you know this food satisfies? That's what I mean, man. I love you guys and your beautiful questions that you're asking me, because this book is not full of folly. This book is full of truth. Stay in the same chapter and look at what folly offers you in verses 13 and 14. Verses 13 reads like this: the woman of folly is boisterous, she is naive, and knows nothing. Look at verse 14. That's hardcore trying to protect me. Look at verse 14. And she sits at the doorway of her house on a seat by the high places of the city. See, so you got two kind of women calling at you. You have a woman of wisdom calling to feed you some good food, and a woman of folly. Now, I love this contrast, because wisdom is going to do that. Wisdom is not going to say, you better do right, boy, you better do right, girl, and don't give you an opportunity to do wrong. No, it's up to you. See, and when I read this book, and I read this wonderful, wonderful passage is coming from this book, and this book can help me. Forget the church. Stop going to church, giving your money to them people. They're raping you of your life. Listen, if you live in this capitalistic society, you need your money. God blesses, praise his holy name. If he offers you money, he's giving you that money for you and your family, not to give to some joker up there got you listening to nursery rhymes, fairy tales, bullshit, and not giving you the word of God. I'm sorry for cursing, for those of you that don't like to hear a pastor curse, but I am fed up with these people that are raping you and diminishing you of your life. That is a form of colonial religion that has sapped the life sap out of our culture. Stop that. Find God and live. And stop attesting to those things that take from you and take from your environment. And I don't care what they feel about me. They can hate my living guts. I'm going to tell you the truth until I die. That's why God pulled me out of the world and called me as a preacher. Oh my goodness. Listen to what wisdom provides for you, my friend. It provides a spiritual life. The food and the drink from wisdom satisfies as you compare it, wisdom's folly to folly's folly. Yeah, wisdom, as you compare wisdom to folly in verses 13 and 14 of the same chapter. Now we're going to go down to verse 6a so we can end the study. And it says, forsake your folly and live. Isn't this beautiful? Now, wisdom is screaming up. Wisdom says that we are to leave gullibility behind by learning of wisdom. So it's either you're gullible to fail again, and it's beautiful as you ask these kinds of questions. So let's go deeper. Let's go deeper into verse 6 as we end this up. Folly denotes immaturity, youthfulness of spirit. Folly, as opposed to wisdom, makes you want to scream, grow up. Because, see, wisdom helps you with the idea that you've done some growing. Stop eating junk food and eat the right plate. Sit at the right seat. This is what wisdom says to you. He says, don't be like the naive ones. See, wisdom is hollering out all of these adjectives to you. In verse 6b, it says, and proceed in the way of understanding. You note the reward that wisdom promises. You know what they're saying? Live life now. See what I mean? It makes it simple. It makes it plain. It's not difficult. You don't need 15 easy points a way to have a successful life. You don't need any of that. For God's sake, just do what's sensible, reasonable. The reward of wisdom, or the reward that wisdom promises you, is life. Life. Sometimes life is going to take time. It's going to take you down a particular road, a journey that's adventurous. Sometimes it's going to be painful. You break an arm right before you are able to make it on the team. That changes the way your whole life goes. Live life. Wisdom says open up yourself to live life and stop trying to make life happen for you. I hope that this study has done something for you. It's done a heck of a lot for me. And now I have to get ready because I'm being called away. Life calls me. You know the guy that did radio with me, Bob Kling? Well, he's on his way over here to pick me up. And we're going to go have dinner tonight and go out to a comedy thing. I told him, nothing can make me laugh because nothing is funny. But he thinks I need to cheer up, so that's what I'm going to try to do. Thank you for coming to my website. I really appreciate you guys that appreciate the Bible. Let's start the new year off right? God bless.